This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next, the new edition of the new WHFR Journal here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, this time for Friday, October the 3rd, 2008. Very exciting here on the Henry Ford Community College campus today. There's a political seminar, workshop, conference that's going on, and it's sort of already happened, so don't think that you can get over here. But just to let you know what we did, and it's a credit to the Political Science Department, and this is it. In this election year, Henry Ford Community College and the League of Women Voters will host the Michigan Student Political Issues Convention. Okay, not a conference, not an expo, not a workshop, a convention. Okay, from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Oh, okay, half an hour more today, and it's Friday, October 3rd, in our Andrew Mazzara Administrative Services and Conference Center right here on our main campus at 5101 Evergreen in Dearborn. College and high school students from Southeast Michigan will attend the convention to develop a consensus of political issues important to them by voting in caucus sessions, developing an agenda, and asking local politicians to help them find appropriate solutions to their concerns. And that's reported by, or the goals reported by Anthony Perry, who's the HFCC political science instructor and coordinator of the event. And he said, quote, "The civic action activities of the Student Political Issues Convention are important for multiple reasons. These activities provide young people with a venue to articulate their concerns. These events also provide students with an opportunity to engage their fellow students and political elites on critical issues important to them and their community." My emphasis there on political elites. You know, well, the criticism made of anyone who's an elitist is supposedly that they're out of touch with the people lower down the list, the non-elite, okay? And that probably includes most everybody by the usual definition. But speakers at the convention should have included today State Senator Irma Clark Coleman, hyphenated last name there, State Representative Morris Hood III, Wayne County Commissioner Gary Warrenchuk, Dearborn Mayor Jack B. O'Reilly Jr. Now they've dropped the B, and they've dropped the Jr. from talking about him. So, Dearborn Heights Mayor Daniel Poletko, and representatives from the McCain and Obama presidential campaigns. And that's a wonderful thing. It's to empower students and to also give some feedback to the elected officials that did attend, exactly what their feelings and ideas are. Of course, the elected officials probably are listening tongue-in-cheek because they know the numbers are really low for people under the age of 25, under the age of 30, even going to vote. It is the age group where most people don't vote, don't register in the highest percentages. Very sad, isn't it? So, in a way, it's good to show up, good to have the story on the front page of the Press and Guide from Wednesday, October 1st, and it doesn't hurt to get these to listen to what people have to say. I think that's kind of good for a representative, isn't it? But in fact, they know that they don't really have to make it a top priority to do what these young people are talking about, because they're not going to vote in large enough numbers. Maybe the people that attend the convention will, but the other people in the same age group just won't even register or won't even vote. So I'm just dropping the story right there. It's a great idea, and anything we can do to further young people getting registered and voting, maybe for the first time in a presidential election. All of us should work on that. And I want to mention that the Dearborn City Clerk's Office, which is where you register to vote if you live in the city of Dearborn, east, west, middle, is open until Monday, this Monday at 5 p.m. If you take adequate pieces of identification and proof of your residency, or sometimes they want to see a gas bill, electric bill that's got your name on it at that same address, a phone bill, landline phone bill, and so on. That can be something that's will help them identify you. Otherwise, you can't even register to vote. So that's kind of scary, isn't it? Yep. Okay. Well, people around the station here, by the way, did I mention my name is Jay Koronek? Hi. Hi, everybody out there in Radio Land. I am the host of this show, the new WHFR Journal. It is local news and views, local issues as we get from the local papers and from other nearby sources, and also things that matter to us that we try to spread around the community. Okay, now to my comment about that conference. They had representative from the Obama and the McCain campaigns there. What about the other candidates for president? They have smaller budgets, less recognized, but they're all running for president. You could choose, if you were registered, to vote for any of the six that are on the ballots. And the Dearborn Press and Guide for this week, again, October 1st, from this last Wednesday, did have a listing of the ballot for November 4th. And, of course, it does vary. I was at the city clerk's office this morning, and they do now have available sample ballots, okay? But you have to let them know what part of where do you live in Dearborn, because when you get down below the presidential list, in terms of the district for both Michigan rep and national rep, Dearborn has been gerrymandered. Jerry did it. No, it's just what they call it, with a G, gerrymandering. In other words, the party in power, and this was the Republicans in the legislature a couple years back, they got a chance to split up the district into areas that they thought a majority of Republicans would be, so that they could get more Republicans elected. It has nothing to do with the number of Republicans in the whole state of Michigan. It's just the way you slice up the pie so that you can actually get more Republican reps from the districts that you chop up in the way you chop them up. Okay, I think gerrymandering should be patently illegal. Obviously, you have to draw the line somewhere. And in Michigan, of course, we have some areas that have huge densities of population. It's not really fair to, of course, have one rep for 20,000 people. Another area, you got maybe several counties, and there's only 20 people living there, if that's possible in the UP somewhere. Might be possible. So there has to be some judgments made about numbers. And then just a matter of, common self-interest among the two major political parties of how they want to draw the line on one side of Telegraph or the other, or one side of Michigan Avenue or the other, it would give them an advantage. But maybe it comes out real close. What the Republicans did last time around, and Gary Warrenchuk told us about this, because he formerly was a Republican, and he totally disagreed. He voted no on the gerrymandering that split Dearborn up into this ridiculous pie that we have now, and other areas too. Of course, Gary Warrenchuk is now a Democrat for, I think, primarily other reasons than the gerrymandering. But it was something that he spoke out against, and it's one of those crazy things that goes on. But where are the other elected representatives? Let me go down the list. And I had to check at the clerk's office in order to get the information, make sure it was valid. Because here are the people that are on the ballot for president and vice president of the United States. Remember, you're not voting for them, you're voting for electors. That'll kind of scare you away right there. Under the presidential part of the general election official ballot, and again, in Dearborn, there's three separate ballots because there are some differences in terms of the representatives to the state and to Michigan, depending on where you live in Dearborn. But all the presidential side is there. But of course, And it's wrong too, isn't it, folks? You're voting for people to be going to the Electoral College in Michigan and vote for who they think should be president in the U.S., okay? They are, if you vote for John McCain, Sarah Palin, it would be people appointed by the Republican Party, supposedly Republican Party faithfuls, lackeys, whatever, people that will do whatever the party says they want them to do, which probably would mean McCain-Palin. They want them to vote that way. However, people, once they finally get their appointment to the Electoral College, and these are people you didn't vote for twice removed or three times removed, they can vote any way they want to. Yep, that's the Constitution of the United States of America. That's how we get a president. Okay? And there have been some horrible instances in the history of the U.S. of these problems. Also, of course, you've probably heard this several times, at least twice, if not more, that a person wins the popular vote in the United States but loses the presidency, loses the election, because the Electoral College voted differently. And there's a couple of reasons for that, but basically the Electoral College can vote for whoever they want to, all those individual electors. Scary, huh? I think so. This is always talked about at election times for president once every 4 years. Anything ever done? No. No, it worked for our grandfathers. Yeah, it didn't work well. But hey, why change it? Just because there's problems. Just because you can take care of the problems. Well, why should you? Oh, my gosh. That is such a backward kind of approach. A lot of things can be changed and relatively easily. We just do it. Who knows what might happen if the public vote actually might mean something? Maybe more people would choose to register to vote. It certainly is a disencouragement, a disencouragement to voting for young people when they know that their vote doesn't necessarily add up. And the electors, whoever they might be, can vote any way they want to, even differ from the party that appointed them. Well, here are the names. McCain-Palin, of course, Republican Party. Obama-Biden, Democratic Party. McKinney, Cynthia McKinney, you may not have heard their names before, and Rosa Clemente, two women, Green Party candidates for president and vice president. That's McKinney, Clemente. For the U.S. Taxpayers Party, Chuck Baldwin and Daryl Castle. Anybody ever heard of them before? U.S. Taxpayers Party? No? Okay. I found out reading a paper called The American Free Press. Yeah? It's a weekly paper. You have to get it by mail. And it's got a lot of articles that are erratic and conspiratorial in attitude. In other words, there's a plot out there. All kinds of plots, according to many of their stories. But they did a whole feature on the U.S. taxpayers candidate, as well as one on Bob Barr and Wayne Root, the Libertarian candidate, and Ralph Nader and Matt Gonzalez. Now, this is what I had to check this morning with the Dearborn City Clerk's office. Ralph Nader and Matt Gonzalez are, yes, it's true, it's not a misprint in the Press and Guide at all. They got it right. They just copied it from the sample ballot, probably. Are listed as the presidential and the vice presidential candidates from the Natural Law Party here in Michigan. Now, I haven't had a chance to check with anyone in the Nader Gonzalez campaign here in Michigan about why that is. But it has happened more than once in Michigan. It is that a nationally known candidate, in order to get on the ballot in many states where they don't have the money to do a petition drive, especially for an independent candidate, very, very difficult, because a party like the Natural Law Party, who was on the ballot last time for president, they have been for many, many years here in Michigan. And I don't know how many other states, but quite a few other states. Anyway, they were here in Michigan. They got enough votes that it qualifies them to be an official party, and therefore they can get, without any additional cost to them, I think, their candidates, their choices of candidates on the ballot in Michigan for everybody to vote for. I can, from what I know about Nader Gonzalez, and Ralph Nader in particular, as I've heard him speak many times, and we know that he was the Green Party candidate for president in 2000. Okay, but he in 2004 ran as an independent, and I don't think he was on as many state ballots as this time, maybe 30 some. But that's because he ran as an independent and was so expensive, so difficult to get on the ballot. So maybe the Natural Law Party asked him, or he asked them, could I use your ballot access and become your candidate in that state? And we do know, and I can guarantee you this is true, because Ralph even told the Green Party in 2000, just because you're putting me at the top of your ballot doesn't mean I'm going to do anything you tell me. Doesn't mean I'm going to support anything, although I know that Ralph Nader does support many, 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 maybe as much as 90% of the planks of the Green Party. But he's not going to be anybody else's lackey or flunky or slave or whatever. He's going to do it his way, and it's going to cut across party platforms wherever needed. Okay, talk about a maverick. Talk about a maverick. Ralph Nader is our number one maverick. Now, I'm just pointing this out so that you continue to know that and do not reject Ralph Nader or Chuck Baldwin or Bob Barr or Cynthia McKinney for their party affiliations, and in this case, Nader for his affiliation in this state with the Natural Law Party. I know that he's on the ballot as an independent in other states, and who knows what other party might have picked him up, in fact. And I'm sure he said the same thing to them. He said, well, I really appreciate the ballot access. Give people a chance to vote for me. And just don't expect me to do anything according to your previous platform. And I didn't have a chance to find out, as I did 4 years ago, what the current Natural Law Party platform is. I can just tell you in Michigan, forget about it. There's no corollary between Natural Law Party platforms and what Ralph Nader will choose to do. At least he will not let any of their, even if he agrees with 90% of the Natural Law Party platform, whatever it is today, he will be his own person. And that's always been clear whenever he's run for president. And this is just one of the games you have to play, because the political process is not open to people unless they're extremely rich or have vested interests. That means they're already part of the system, which means they're already part of the problem, I think. So that's what it is there. Now, let me take a look. As long as I have the sample ballot here in front of me, I'll let you know that there are choices for other parties at almost each level. United States Senator, yep, besides Hoogendijk, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that properly, the Republican candidate for governor, Jack Hoogendijk, or Hoogendijk Jr., is a Republican candidate who's up against Carl Levin. Green Party, Harley G. Mickelson. U.S. Taxpayers, Michael N. Nitkinen. Libertarian, Scotty Bowman. We had Scotty on this show back in 2004, and he's a Libertarian. Doug Turn, he's the Natural Law Party person for U.S. Senator from Michigan. In the representative in Congress, 15th District, again, this is different in different parts of Dearborn, where John Dingell is, there's a competition from John Lynch, Republican, Amy Smith, the Green Party, James H. Wagner, U.S. Taxpayers, and Gregory Scott Stemphill, who is Libertarian. And we've talked to Greg Stemphill several times on this show, too. And that's west side of Dearborn. On the east side of Dearborn, that's called the 14th District. John Conyers Jr. is a Democratic representative. Clyde Shabazz is the Green Party candidate. And Richard Sekula is a Libertarian Party candidate, because Mr. Conyers has been there for so long, and he always gets such a huge number of votes, percentage of votes in the 14th District, that, well, the Republicans didn't even try. They didn't even put a candidate there. So, you know, that's a district the Republicans just gave up on. Nobody even wanted to put their name on the ballot because it cost a little money. You maybe want to send around a flyer or something, who you are and what you're doing. What a waste of time. But interestingly, not a waste of time to the Green Party and the Libertarian Party. So there are two other choices there. State Board of Ed, choices from all the parties except National Law Party. Governor of Wayne State, governors, I guess, of Wayne State. All the parties represented except Natural Law, and so on. So it's a fun ballot, folks. Kim Worthy, Democrat, for prosecuting attorney in Wayne County, does have competition from Matthew Abel, Green Party candidate, but no one else. Now, I would assume you should be at least a lawyer, and you have that legal background if you're going to be a prosecuting attorney. And so maybe the Republicans, no, I'm sure there are some Republican lawyers that might have considered running against Kim Worthy, but a lot of recognition for her work and all of her efforts and so on. And she, of course, quite significant, took the lead in the prosecutions of Kwame Kilpatrick. And probably people thought, well, she did what she had to do and she was competent. And whether or not you feel the mayor got a fair shake on that from media, I think he got certainly a fair shake from the legal process. But so there's a Green Party candidate, and I bet Matthew Abel is a lawyer, does have a law degree. For sheriff, we have a Republican, a Democrat, and U.S. taxpayers, no Libertarian. So it does change there. And so you can't just go into the straight party ticket, folks, if you're going to go Green Party or Taxpayers Party or Libertarian or Natural Law, because they're not in every choice on down. And it's good to find out whatever you can about the people on the ballot for that particular office. And again, it varies depending on where you live in Dearborn. As you know, we also have a local school district competition. You can only vote for two, and we have Amy Blackburn, John C. Corbin, Sharon Lee Domage, Mary Lane, and Tamiria Mativa going at it there. Okay, and it's interesting they don't put down who the incumbent is for that. They do put incumbent, I think I raised this before, they do put down the title of the person if they are an incumbent already, and that's kind of interesting. I'd raised this question before, but they don't do it for the local school board district who is already in office. What about those proposals? And checking all three ballots here. Excuse me, Mike. Yep, there's only two proposals on the ballot in November that we all have to talk about. I think one you've seen, that's the embryonic stem cell research in Michigan proposal that would amend the state constitution to allow. That's proposal two. We've seen TV ads, a great number against it, and they're starting to run several, sort of like for it. They're dispelling and pointing out as wrong and a lie, in fact, the way the ads against it were stated. Let me read that proposal to you to see if it makes any sense. The summary is what I said, a proposal to amend the state constitution to address human embryo and human embryonic stem cell research in Michigan, proposal two. The proposed constitutional amendment would, number one, expand use of human embryos for any research permitted under federal law, subject to the following limits. The embryos, first, are created for fertility treatment purposes. Two, are not suitable for implantation or in excess of clinical needs. Three, would be discarded unless used for research. Four, were donated by the person seeking fertility treatment. Okay, major proposal two, provide the stem cells cannot be taken from human embryos more than 14 days after cell division begins. Okay, so not much development there has gone on in the human female at that point. Major point number three, prohibit any person from selling or purchasing human embryos for stem cell research. Major point number four is prohibit state and local laws that prevent, restrict, or discourage stem cell research, future therapies, and cures should this be adopted. So if you want it adopted, if you want it in favor of the change, you vote yes on proposal two and no if you're against it. Proposal one, though, Haven't seen this one for a while, but it's been tried in Michigan before. And it is something that is in place in several other states, the United States. Proposal 1 says it's a legislative initiative to permit the use and cultivation of marijuana for specified medical conditions. And the explanation is the proposed law would first permit physician-approved use of marijuana by registering patients with debilitating medical conditions, including cancer, glaucoma, HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, MS, that's short for multiple sclerosis, of course, and other conditions as may be approved by the Department of Community Health. Some people may not be aware until they read this that medical marijuana, they might have heard it being used for people under chemo treatments and who have cancer, but not necessarily the other diseases that I've mentioned. And there's others that they're definitely, they facilitate and ameliorate the effects of the treatment. I don't think I've overstated that. But certainly they ameliorate the negative effects of some of these other treatments like chemotherapy. Doesn't say here, and I don't believe it's true, that marijuana actually cures any of these diseases, but they certainly can lessen the negative symptoms and can also ameliorate, that is, lessen also and make better, if you will, some of the negative effects of the treatments that are actually from traditional medicine. Point number 2, permit registered individuals to grow limited amounts. You have to be registered, but you can grow limited amounts of marijuana for qualifying patients in an enclosed, locked facility. Number 3, require Department of Community Health to establish an identification card system for patients qualified to use marijuana and individuals qualified to grow marijuana. And number 4, permit registered and unregistered patients and primary caregivers to assert medical reasons for using marijuana as a defense to any prosecution involving marijuana, should this proposal be adopted. As I said, you would vote yes if you're in favor of allowing the medical use and regulated use of marijuana, and no if you're not in favor of that. Okay? So only 2 proposals to be considered in November. Of course, the other so-called hot contest in Dearborn area is a 19th district judge of the district court between Candace Ewing Abbott and Mark W. Summers. Summers, who is the current judge of district court. And that's just because I in East Dearborn have gotten numerous mailings from both of them. There is a very detailed, maybe it's too detailed, long ad that is in one of the papers this week from Judge Summers and stating his position and trying to dispel some of the rumors. Yes, it's in the Press and Guide again Wednesday, October 1st on page 8A, so you can read that in your leisure about what he's done on the bench and sort of a fact checker at the bottom. So I don't think you could get more information about his point of views and his experience than by reading that page, and it would take me probably an hour to read it out loud to you with feeling and emotion and all that. So can't get involved in that today. But anyway, the other thing is, if you are somewhat confused about some of the backgrounds of some of the candidates, first of all, there is a voter guide, several-page staple-together publication from the League of Women Voters of Dearborn Heights. And it might even be on their website, which is League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, all just the letters of the first letter of those words I just said. So it's LWVDDH, League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, .org. Okay, but I got this copy from the clerk's office. Maybe they put some of these at the Secretary of State's office, because you can register to vote at Michigan Secretary of State's office, too, if you're not registered. And they give backgrounds where they were provided. For example, the 11th District State Representative, David E. Nathan, Democrat, responded, and Walter A. Meyer, Jr., Republican, did not respond to their questionnaire, the same questions. 15th District, Gino Polidori responded to their questions. J. Scott Sayons is Republican, against Polidori. He didn't respond. What does that say about these candidates? Not really official candidates. Bob Costin, in the 16th District, state rep, Democrat. And Joseph Smith, Republican, did respond. Good for him. Andy Dillon, a Democrat, is up against Sandra Eggers. And I guess he's also up for recall, too. Andy Dillon out there, 17th District. Although that would only recall him for 2 months. Give him a little November-December vacation. And then if you did elect him to return in January, then he's back at it. So a little question for those of you that have to choose there. But Sandra Eggers, Republican, did respond with her background, answered their questions. 9th District County Commissioner Diane Webb, Democrat, whatever area that is. Mark Slater, Republican, didn't respond. Gary Warrenchuk, Democrat, he responded, but his competition from Republicans, William Beddoes, did not respond. Now, the only criticism I make here did they send these ballots to the other parties who have candidates? Doesn't look like it. On the nonpartisan ballot, of course, Candace Abbott and Mark Summers responded. And in terms of Dearborn School Board, we did not have two of the candidates respond. So we have Amy Blackburn, John C. Corbin, Sharon Lee Dumage, and Mary Lane. So three incumbents and only one of the other people. Tamiria Mativa did not respond. And they don't even have her name there, so I don't even know if they sent her a ballot because they didn't say that she didn't respond. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Turn the page, Koronek. Okay, she did respond. Very good. So we have all of the candidates right here in this brochure for Dearborn School Board that did respond to the two questions. Not much background, but something that are there. And also millages and proposals in other areas. For example, Dearborn Heights has to vote on whether or not they want to fund, renew the millage, it's millage renewal and reduction, in fact, for Wayne County Community College. And you won't see that on the Dearborn ballot. Why? Well, we already have our own community college. That means we don't have to pay for Wayne County Community College. But since Dearborn Heights doesn't, and they're not in our Henry Ford Community College district, they have to choose whether to support them or not. And so in other districts, other areas, there's some operating millages, the agricultural property tax, again, the recall for Andy Dillon, Dearborn Heights School District 7 restoration millage proposal for building and site sinking fund. Site sinking fund. Their site is sinking out there, folks. Be careful. That's a joke. It's some sort of economic term. A sinking fund. It's not bad. Depending what you use it for, I guess. So that's the that's ways you can find out things, as well as reading the local Dearborn Press and Guide or your local area paper and the Dearborn Times Herald. They're both in the next 4 weeks before the election. The election is on November 4th. Today's October 3rd, so we just have a month and 1 day, sort of. October has 31 days to go before that election. And remember, tell everybody you know that if they're not registered, they can't even choose to not vote, much less vote, on November 4th. And they can register all the way through Monday at 5 p.m. when city clerk's offices and probably Secretary of State's offices close. Now, check ahead. I only checked on Dearborn City Clerk's office. Maybe some other city clerk's office will close at 4:30. Also, and I didn't see this in the paper, it might be there, there's a chance your city clerk office will be open tomorrow, Saturday, October the 4th, just for the purpose of getting people registered. So if you can't make this in today, then by all means, check and see with your either Secretary of State's office, and they're usually open Saturdays, aren't they? Limited hours anyway, and see what's happening there. So in that spirit, and we just do things kind of go with the flow around here, because I've got a stack of stories about politics and local area that can't possibly include them all. But Tom Watkins, who is one of the editorial opinions that are used fairly regularly at the Dearborn Press and Guide, just reinforces in an articulate way what I was saying about voting. He says, vote, or liberty is history. He says, there's the virus in the air that is infecting the foundation of our state and nation. That virus is voter apathy. Less than 20% of the registered voters in Michigan voted in the recent primary election. Anyone who's eligible to vote should be registered to vote. Monday is the last day to register to vote for the November 4th general election. Everyone who is registered to vote needs to understand the candidates' positions in the various ballot issues. Then they need to vote in the upcoming general election on November 4th. In far too many past elections at the local, state, and national level, the voter turnout has been so low, it is unacceptable. And if you, I'm just adding here, you know, the opinions expressed on this show aren't not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not necessarily faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anyone else. But I hope so. Anyway, if you look at, they say, ooh, well, 60% voted for that presidential candidate. No, no. Because many of the adults in the U.S. weren't registered. Many of the others who were registered didn't vote. So they won by 10%. Majority, but in fact, they weren't the majority choice. We don't know who the non-registered and the non-voters who were registered would have voted for, but these candidates can't say democracy has triumphed. I don't see it that way. I know in a democracy it's your right not to vote if you don't want to. God bless America, and I don't want to mean that in a negative way against anyone's view of God. But I don't see it that way. I see voting as a right, a privilege, and even I feel it's a duty. I personally feel it's a duty. But voting by itself, without being educated a little bit about the issues and about the candidates, and trying to decide rationally, that means not emotionally. I can feel in my gut. I can trust Sarah Palin. Do you really hear people? I hear people saying that all the time. And unfortunately, in several books, the last one was the Delusion of Rational Voters, or The Illusion, excuse me. The book is entitled The Illusion of the Rational Voter here in America. Big study, big research. People don't vote rationally. Well, that's your right. You can use any criteria you want. But why wouldn't you want to make a rational choice? Something that you look at goals, you see they agree with your goals for the country and for your own situation. Okay? That can be done logically. Even if you want to decide it on the basis of a religious belief or an ethical stance or whatever, it can be done logically. And then, but the problem is a lot of people who are polled and so on, they are logical, but then when they go in to vote, they become illogical in the ballot box. All the excitement or the tension or the stress or maybe they're hurried or they're late for something, so they rush through it when they have the ballot in front of them in the ballot box, they vote for the wrong person. Problems with absentee ballots. You say, well, you can sit there and stare at it and make your choices leisurely. Yeah, but you always have the tendency to do it too quickly with an absentee ballot. As soon as you get it, a lot of people fill it out, toss it in the mail the next day. They don't do their research, don't do their homework. And then another 2 weeks, they see some ad on TV or they read an interview or they hear something, a longer interview on television or a debate. Oh my gosh, if I would have known then what I know now, I wouldn't have voted for that person. I would have voted for someone else. So I do suggest that if you have an absentee ballot, you send it in like maybe just 3 days before. I mean, give it time in the mail, even in Dearborn, to get in to arrive at the specified time. But don't necessarily send it in immediately because none of us can know everything at any point in time. New things do come up, the so-called October surprises that sometimes come up, issues about candidates, their backgrounds that we didn't know before that actually are significant enough that maybe it changes our minds about who we're going to vote for. So, and then, of course, once they're elected, you can't just leave it behind. Well, back to Tom Watkins here. He said, in far too many elections, voter turnout has been low. It doesn't bode well for our democracy or for our state. He goes on to say, where are all the patriotic citizens who draped themselves in red, white, and blue after terrorist attacks threatened our country on September 11th? There is no more profound expression of patriotism than exercising one's right to vote. You a patriot? You love America? Then you love to vote, and you do it, don't you? There's a direct connection. It's the first thing down the list. If you're patriotic, if you feel that you love America and everything it stands for, and you believe in the it's a democracy, so therefore you're going to vote. Every election, you're going to register and you're going to vote. He goes on, we are reminded that in the beginning of the United States of America, only white men who owned property could vote. Yeah, our Constitution was a little bit lax there. Only white men who owned property. So if you're a white man who was homeless, or living in an apartment or something, or bed and breakfast somewhere, or whatever, no, you couldn't vote in America. So the Constitution really wasn't very perfect in terms of who could vote when. Obviously, women couldn't vote, and slaves who didn't own property couldn't vote. We were reminded that in the beginning, African Americans were kept from voting for most of the 20th century by discriminatory laws. One infamous one was the poll tax in various states. They required people to pay money to vote. Small amount, but if you're very poor, you couldn't afford to vote. You couldn't afford to pay the poll tax. Women were granted the right to vote in 1920 when the 19th Amendment to the Constitution barely passed, by the way. You know, it just barely passed. Why? Because women couldn't vote for it. That's right. Think of the argument you'd have to make to pass the 19th Amendment. You'd have to convince a majority of men who were registered in voting to vote for it. Wow. Talk about a hard sell in those days, huh? Of course, the women behind the scenes, you either vote for it or I'll find out and I'm going to give you-know-what or take you-know-what away from you. So I guess women could influence some power behind the scenes, but, you know, in that ballot box and the privacy there and secret ballots and all that, it did pass, thank goodness. And in 1971, the 26th Amendment lowered the legal voting age to 18. And I can't believe that I said to somebody the other day, you had to be 21. I can't believe that. It is 18, folks. So you high school students, parents of high school students, is your brain as faulty as mine? It is 18. Get them to vote. Get them to register. Got till Monday, 5 p.m. Okay, tell everybody. Yeah, and that was, of course, the reason for that. 71 was the Vietnam War. People were dying like crazy, and they were dying because of that. They were dying, but they couldn't even vote. So, unfortunately, my phone is going off, so that's life. How do I make it go quiet? There we go. Okay, too many buttons on these things. As a former Michigan superintendent of public instruction, that's Tom Watkins, continuing, he says, I believe our role as educators is more than just teaching the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. That's, of course, not the way you spell arithmetic and writing. There's an A and a W in front of those, but we used to call it the three R's, from people that didn't know how to read and write and do arithmetic. Anyway, he says, it must include a fourth R, responsibility. He says, if our free society is to remain free, each of us must be an involved participant in the democratic process. If we fail to do so, the liberty we cherish could become history. Democracy is not a spectator sport, he concludes here. We need to engage every citizen to preserve and strengthen our democracy. One person can and often does make a difference. George W. Bush, squeaked by Al Gore in the 2000 presidential election. John Engler won the 1990 governor's race against Governor Blanchard by only 17,000 votes, with a come-from-behind upset victory in 1960. So that's the other thing. Well, I know who's going to win. The polls say who's going to win. I don't have to vote. Have you ever heard people say that? That's crazy. It's crazy because a lot of people have won these races even though the polls said they weren't going to win. Why? Because people who were going to vote for the winner sat at home saying, I don't have to vote. They're going to win anyway. What's one vote? A lot of people feel that way. Your candidate's not going to win. You believe in a candidate. You want to vote for a candidate. You do vote for a candidate. Okay, it's that clear. Many races for John F. Kennedy in 1960, they mentioned here, experienced extremely tight race. There were some precincts, you know, one vote difference across the U.S. between Nixon and Kennedy. It was so close. One vote. Now, when I ran for senior class president in my high school in Wayne County here, Flat Rock High School, many years ago, I ran for senior class president. I won by one vote. One vote. And of course, I voted for myself because I thought, well, if the candidate doesn't believe in themselves, then they don't deserve the support of all the others. And I found out later that the very nice guy and a friend of mine who was running against me for senior class president, he voted for me because he said, well, I thought you would vote for me. Oh, my goodness. Well, it was a sweet thing for him to do, but that's not the way you do politics. He was actually, therefore, in a way, as I see it, sort of insulting the support of all the people that did vote for him. You know, he was denying it by voting for me. Now, it's true that if he voted for me and I voted for him, guess what? We'd have a tie. We would have had a tie. I don't know what the high school would have done with a tie. Revote? I don't know. But he didn't. And of course, the change in vote anywhere there in terms of the campaign and the hands that I shook and the people I talked to, just one vote one way or the other. It's not just my vote and his vote would have made the difference. But yeah, he voted for me. Well, let me tell you, no politician. First principle is you vote for yourself when you're running for office. Okay. You don't want to lose. If you want to win, then you vote for yourself because you know one vote makes a difference. So this is one way you should emulate our politicians. That's wisdom, folks. You want somebody to win, you register, you vote for them. Even though, yeah, you're voting in terms of presidential race for electors, which don't necessarily have to vote the way you did. Crazy. And a person by the name of Edward Everett Hale, was he a comedian? Anyway, he said, I am only one, but I'm a great philosopher, I guess. I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. What I can do, I ought to do, and by the grace of God, I will do. Now, that's inspirational, isn't it? So Tom Watkins said, you can and should exercise your right to vote. As the election nears, he goes on to say, here's a homework assignment. There are 10 things you can do to increase the voter turnout on November 4th. Well, good for him. Okay. Number one, vote. Number two, take 10 friends with you to the polls, who are registered, of course. Number three, get an absentee ballot by calling your local city or township office if you think you aren't going to vote in person. Number four, be an informed voter. Call the League of Women Voters or the Citizens Research Council. Next, don't know where to vote? Call your city or township office or visit for information. Next, if you're a business owner, encourage employees to vote. Consider giving them time off to vote. Here at WHFR, we got this announcement right on the copy stand in front of me. And reminding all of our volunteer DJs to announce this. The deadline, not Monday, October 6th, 5 p.m. If you're 18. I think also, let's get technical here, if you can prove you're going to be 18 before November 4th, you can register now. So if your birthday is in a week or two, don't worry. At least I don't think you should worry. I think this is correct, is that if you're 18 before November 4th, you can register now before October 6th. Even if you're not 18 yet, I think. Now, I could be wrong. Call your local city clerk's office or the Secretary of State's office and find out the details there. But don't give up just because, well, I won't be 18 until after the registration deadline. I don't think you have to be. I think they will allow you to register as long as you can prove you'll be 18 by November 4th. So, like, if you're... And the question is, what if you're born on November 4th? I don't know, but at least November 3rd, I think. So check on that. Don't give up, okay? If you have media influence, open and close your TV and radio news show with Get Out the Vote messages. Ooh, that's where I heard about doing this. Ask major political party organizations to hold joint press conferences to encourage everyone to vote. Next, if you're not registered to vote, don't be benched for the general election on November 4th. Register to vote today. Next, give yourself extra credit on this homework assignment if you're doing other activities to get out the vote and make democracy work for all of us. People around the globe are dying to vote. Dying to vote. Yeah, he probably means that literally as well as figuratively. Vote or liberty is history. Okay. See if there's anything else in this edition of Dearborn Press and Guide, which I have been all over the place with here, and it just happens that I started looking at it, and it's got a lot of stuff this week. I'm sure the Times-Herald does, too. Remember, in Dearborn, Public Service Day parking enforcement starts, and that's next Monday, okay? And so if you have your car on the street, the first and third trash pickup day, first full week, trash pickup day, and the third full week of every month, the trash pickup day, then they will ticket and or maybe tow your car away. So that's the way they're doing it now. And the citation is going to cost $35 to $70. I don't know what the difference is there. Would it be the same for everybody? Oh, well. And you can get information from cityofdearborn.org. And you can also use the internet, cityofdearborn.org, or you can call City Hall. The number they give is 313-943-2085 about public service days. You can check the 2008 Dearborn City calendar if you're a resident. They sent you one last November, and you should be able to check that out to explain which day is which. That is a really nice service. I do think that's very worthwhile. It's hard to plan in advance, and I'm sure some exceptions always have to be made because things always change. For example, the loose leaf collection rules have changed, okay? It's a simple. They made it simpler. This is wonderful. This is, you know, historic, is that in Dearborn, they actually made a rule simpler. Now, the Public Service Day rule also is on signs in every neighborhood. So if you wonder what those new signs are about, in fact, I've got two new signs on my block, and I've only got eight houses. So I guess they had to put a sign there. So now we have a sign about public service days and when to keep your car off the street. And it's the same as trash days, but only on the first and third trash day, first week and third week trash day. It has to be a full week. Confusion there. But the leaf rules is, of course, you need to put your raked leaves from your property in the right trash barrels that have stickers on top saying organic waste or whatever they say. I've got four of them myself. You can get those from City Hall, those stickers anyway for your trash barrels, or paper bags, which of course are recyclable that you put the leaves into, and you buy those at the store. They don't give those out for free. And yet, you can also in Dearborn rake your leaves to the curb. And this is the simple new principle, not in the calendar, though, this way. Only rake your leaves into the street on the day before public service days. So it can't be during the public service day? No, because you might miss when they come down to pick them up. I mean, okay. So maybe if you did it at 7 a.m. on public service day, you'd have it done before they come. But who knows when they might come down. So you need to do it the day before. And they would prefer you not do it 3-4 days before because, you know, the winds and the cars coming down the street will just blow those leaves all over the place and mess things up again. So very simple rule for raking leaves into the street. Do it the day before your public service day. Now the question is, what day is your public service day? What's the first full week? What's the third week? What day is your trash on? You got to move your cars. You got, oh my gosh, it can be confusing to own property in Dearborn, huh? Okay. So you got enough on your mind about the economy? Let me just dip back in some of the other papers. Detroit Public Schools confirms a jump in student count, although three Heights districts see a drop in the number of students there. There was International Peace Day. Did you miss that? Peace. You know, not war. That was last Sunday, or two Sundays ago, I guess. Sorry, nobody told me about that. We're always missing out on peace. Did you notice that? It's really too bad. Now, there, look for another way to get information about voters. I should have mentioned this earlier, is the on your cable television, local access channel. Both WOW and Comcast should have edited together, and they should be already showing, at least in Dearborn, the Summers-Abbott debate, which was an hour long. It happened this last Tuesday at Dearborn City Hall. And the second forum is the candidates for Dearborn Public School District Board of Ed. So they invited all the candidates, Blackburn, Corbin, Dumage, Lane, and Mativa. We don't know if everybody showed up, but I assume so. And you can watch those. They'll be running over and over again. I think that would be very valuable to try to catch those. Cable television, local access channel, call WOW, local office, or Comcast local office for date or time. I'm sure it'll be in the paper probably next week when those are going to happen. Henry Ford Community College, we're up 15% in enrollment, bursting at the seams. Thank you, State of Michigan, and Representative Polidori and Representative Morris Hood. They have been able to get money. $7.5 million sounds like a drop in the bucket compared to $700 billion. But $7.5 million for a science building for us. We already have one, but it'll be an addition, a renovation, an addition. And by the way, it's just half the money that we need. So this is matching funds from the state. So we have to come up with $7.5 million ourselves. But nonetheless, it was part of a huge bill that included construction of projects at universities, colleges, airports, military facilities, and even state parks. But we were part of it. And Governor Granholm has probably signed it into law by now. At this point, last Sunday, she hadn't. She was out of the state for a few days, if not a week, in Japan. I think it's her third or fourth trip to Japan, trying to get additional investment from Japanese companies to provide more jobs in Michigan. And she has been somewhat successful because of those trips in the past. And then she was tied up this week, not tied up literally, but she was acting as Sarah Palin and in briefing sessions, in mock debates with Senator Joe Biden. That's right. His prep involved spending about 3 days in mock debate with Jennifer Granholm so they wouldn't accidentally maybe slip some sexist remark out about you as a woman should understand or something like that, which he didn't. I mean, I'll talk about that debate. Everybody else is, so I'm sure you want to know somehow, right, about these things. Okay, well, yeah, and it's time to go. Yeah, see how time flies when you're having fun? So my comment on that is great performance by Palin, but it was a performance, substance, very little. Factual errors. Biden obviously won if you were looking at that rationally about who knew more about what. Sound bites don't count, so it really it doesn't have much value as far as I'm concerned in terms of whether you think one person won or lost. Soundbite doesn't prove intelligence. Soundbites just mean you can memorize phrases other people give you. But good for Sarah Palin that she didn't fall on her face. But she's a politician. She did get elected governor. She's given speeches before, you know, as mayor and governor and debates. And no, she's not highly educated. She's not particularly intelligent. No insult intended, but she's not a genius. And so some people vote for her because she's just like them. And that's kind of unfortunate. But, oh well, that's one criteria. I don't think it's a valid one. But whatever your choices are, remember you have choices. You have many choices beyond the ones you think you have. So please, I encourage you to register and vote and get other people out there too. It is important, and we do have a lot of choices, and we've got to make a lot of changes. Thanks for listening to the new WHFR Journal, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. It's coming to you from WHFR Dearborn and Henry Ford Community College. And now we're going to proceed with Highway 61 and Blues with Joanne Kay. Clarksdale.